One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today. And get your old self back naturally.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
It's the SNL Hall of Fame podcast with Chief Conversationalist Bill Kenny, featuring Matt Ardill, and special guest Brad Robinson. And now, curator of the hall, JD.
Thank you so much, Mr. Donats. It is great to be here with you for the seventh and final season of the SNL Hall of Fame podcast. You may notice the commemorative mat out front. Use it. The SNL Hall of Fame podcast is a weekly affair where each episode we take a deep dive into the career of a former cast member, host, musical guest, or writer and add them to the ballot for your consideration. Once the nominations have been announced, we turn to you, the listener, to help decide who will be enshrined for perpetuity inside the hall. And that's how we play the game. It is just that simple. Listen up. I am ecstatic about a couple of things that we've got going on today. First of all, we've got our new chief conversationalist, Bill Kenny, and he's going to be rapping with Brad Robinson, which is just fantastic. They are going to be talking about Chevy Chase, which is going to be very interesting for certain. And lastly, Matt called in sick today. So what I decided to do is go down to the laboratory and build the MattBot 4000. So now I'm walking down the hallway right now in an L shape because we are in the middle of a chess cosplay here in the SNL Hall of Fame. And it's going to take me a little longer to get to Matt than I would have liked. In fact, just by dint of the shape of this walk that I'm taking, I'm going to have to stand like 3 feet away from him.
Yeah.
Oh, MattBot 4000, how are you doing over there?
I'm good, JD. Let me just see if I can get you. I can only go on the diagonals because I'm a great big queen. So here we go. So how are you doing?
I'm great. I'm absolutely great. Check. Today is an interesting one, I think, because we are going all the way back to the beginning and we are nominating one of the original Not Ready for Primetime players and somebody who actually had some influence in the creation of the show, from a writing perspective and, one of the earliest writers. Sorry, I don't want to give away your trivia. And we're of course bearing the lead here. We're talking about Chevy Chase, and this is a divisive subject, I feel. So, what have you got for us on this opening episode, Matt?
Cornelius Crane Chase, a.k.a. Tevye, 6'4", born October 8th, 1943. A 14th generation Manhattanite. He was born in Lower Manhattan. He is like old stock New Yorker. He grew up in Woodstock, New York, the son of a Princeton-educated editor and magazine writer, Edward Tinsley Chase, and grandson of illustrator and artist Edward Lee Chase. His mother, Catherine Parker Nee Browning, was a concert pianist and daughter of Rear Admiral Miles Browning, who served on the USS Enterprise aircraft carrier at the Battle of Midway. Her stepfather was Cornelius Vanderbilt Crane, heir to the Crane Company. And her mother, Catherine, was an opera singer at Carnegie Hall, meaning they knew how to get to Carnegie Hall. Hard work, but also nepotism.
What a pedigree.
Yeah, he is old fucking money. He is basically a descendant.
Do that one again without the swear. Sorry. Fucking swear all the time, but it's really hard for me not to, but this podcast is the one I do that's not explicit. So.
Oh, I said freaking.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I thought you said fucking.
No.
Oh.
I didn't hear it.
Sorry.
So I
didn't.
Oh, no, okay. But no worries. I'll re-record that. Meaning he is old money. He is basically the descendant of American royalty. yeah. Now, his nickname, which, you know, Chevy, you'd think that was like, a car reference or something cool like that. No, it's even weirder. His grandmother gave it to him from the English ballad, The Ballad of Chevy Chase.
What?
Yeah, it's just an obscure old English poem reference because, you know, that's what normal people have for nicknames. When his parents divorced, his mom and dad actually did pretty well for himself. Catherine, as mentioned, married into the Vanderbilts. And his dad married into the Folgers family. Yes, the coffee people. So they had all the instant coffee that they could ever ask for. Now, when not summering on one of his various family estates, he grew up and went to Riverdale Country School in the Bronx, where he was kicked out for being a nuisance. Eventually, he was sent to boarding school and graduated from Stockbridge School before going to Harvard for one term before getting kicked out, and then moving to Bard, where he eventually attained an English degree. He holds 110 acting credits, 14 writing credits, 13 soundtrack credits, and 2 producer credits. He actually got to start writing for Mad Magazine, where he wrote a parody of Mission Impossible before moving on to the Smothers Brothers Show in 1973 and becoming a full member of the National Lampoon Radio Hour, where he started working with many of his featured castmates, as well as in the off-Broadway review by the Lampoon called Lemmings, and his first film called The Groove Tube.
What was that called?
The Groove Tube.
Huh. Never heard of that one.
A bit obscure. It's 70s indie cinema. You know, you never know what's out there. At the height of his career, he was earning $7 million per film. Adjusted for inflation, a whole frickin' lot. He turned down the role of Peter Venkman because in the original script, he wasn't into the vibe because apparently it was very scary. Then much more scary than the final product. Now, he has almost died on set. He was electrocuted during the filming of Modern Problems, and it actually did almost kill him.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it just shows how far he's willing to go.
You were going to say Christmas Vacation.
No, the one that I'd have accepted, but no. But yeah, I mean, he's always been very into physical comedy. You know him for falling down a lot. He learned to do that as a soccer player, often having to ditch to get the kick. Unfortunately, all those crackballs did eventually actually mean he had to have back surgery because he had messed up his back so much. But I mean, he is a multi-talented individual. He is an accomplished musician. He's able to play piano, drums, and saxophone. But he says the most fun he's ever had working was making the movie Three Amigos, honestly, given his castmates, that is the most relatable thing that I've ever heard from Chetty. Honestly, it puts a lot of things into context, though. Like, he's always been very, I mean, I don't want to tread on the interview, but he's always been kind of just aloof, you know? I mean, that's kind of his thing. But he's like I said, American royalty. He's literally from like the richest, most powerful families in America. Which is, like Julia Louis-Dreyfus. That's another person who's like from a super rich family that became a funny and hilarious comedian.
So you reminded me of a joke I used to do when I did stand up. When you were talking about his relationship to the Folgers people, and that joke went something like this. Best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. Compliment or cry for help? Bill Kenny, you are with our good friend Brad Robinson of the Not Ready for Primetime podcast. We want you to take it away on this debut episode of our seventh and final season, where you are conversing about Chevy Chase. Give her.
Yes, thank you, JD and Matt. Welcome to season 7 of the SNL Hall of Fame. I'm Bill Kenny, and my first guest was supposed to be here a couple minutes ago. I'm not sure.
Hey, oh, sorry, I'm here. Sorry, I went to the other place. I'm sorry.
I hope you didn't wake Thomas up.
No. Sorry. Wow. Yeah. I love what you've done with this. This is really nice, this setup you got here.
Thank you.
Wow. Yeah. They went all out season 7.
Well, if you don't recognize the voice, you should. He's the co-host of the Not Ready for Primetime project, Brad Robinson. Brad, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Bill. I'm great. Thanks for having me. And let me be the first. I'm so happy to be the first person to congratulate you. So excited to listen to you this season hosting the Hall of Fame. Couldn't think of a better person. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. As I've said a couple of times, I've got big shoes to fill with our friend Thomas Senna, but I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy that you're my first guest. And we have a doozy here to talk about one of the icons of the original era of the show, Chevy Chase, the original celebrity. What's your first initial thoughts about Chevy?
I think he's misunderstood in the history of the show, especially as time has gone on, myself included. As we went back and started rewatching the early seasons of SNL, if you've listened to our show, I am an unapologetic John Belushi fan. I love John. And I feel, you know, in those that early couple seasons, there was like Team Chevy and Team Belushi. And I was very much Team Belushi. But in rewatching all those episodes again, Chevy he deserves a lot of credit. And I think, yeah, as time goes on, it's easy to forget that.
Yeah, I think that's something I've really enjoyed listening to your podcast, is your progression into becoming kind of more of a Chevy fan. I've always been a Chevy fan. He's one of those people like Eddie who I knew from movies before I ever knew him from SNL, going back and watching him. But yeah, it's really interesting. And how do you think your perspective has changed watching all these episodes back to back?
I just appreciate him so much more for what he did on a show that was, it's also, I think, hard to remember 50 years ago It was a brand new show. It had never been done before. So right now there's a blueprint, like, you know what you're supposed to do. And Chevy, I think, is vital in establishing that blueprint, especially stuff like Weekend Update. So, you know, especially younger fans, you have to remember they're swinging without a net. You know, they don't know what they're doing. And so he takes a lot of the burden on his shoulders, and he really does carry that show. And you do see it. You see it through that progression. He has some stellar bits. He was writing, and his star power is really what helped keep that show alive after season one.
Yeah, and that's really important. And I think part of the problem is, with all this time that's passed, the narrative, you know, we'll talk about this right at the top here. Chevy's not known as a great person in some circles. He's had some issues with, you know, drug use, obviously not alone in that. But when he came back to host as many times as he did, he also became known as somebody who wasn't very nice to the newer cast. Mm-hmm. And he's almost kind of been shadow banned the last 25 years. You know, we've gotten a lot of cameos from him, but we haven't even seen him in that regard in 12 years. So do you think, I think you're a sports guy too, Brad. Yeah, I kind of liken him to Pete Rose, who should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame, where you kind of have to look at his playing career. Don't look at the mediocre managerial career. Don't look at all the bad stuff he did. If you can just keep it on the focus of what he did as a cast member, I think it's very important that he should be in the Hall of Fame. Do you think that's the case?
100%. I agree. And I think I did this. I think I fought this way last season when I talked about John Lovitz. He is up for cast member. We were talking about Chevy Chase as a cast member on SNL. So it doesn't matter how many times he came back to host or what happened or cameos or where he's been on the show in the last 25 years. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about. He's being nominated as a cast member, and his contributions as a cast member. And to that point, there was no bigger cast member on the show for a season and a half than Chevy Chase.
Right. So let's get into the beginning moments of that. So the show debuts October 11th, 75. Chevy really becomes a star very quickly between Always Saying Live from New York, his Gerald Ford impression. We'll get into all of these bits in a minute. And then, of course, Weekend Update. Do you think any of these early moments are really the main factor in him becoming the first SNL celebrity?
Oh, yeah. Update and The Fall. I mean, Update and Live from New York. His time on the show, he's the only person, except two instances for a season, almost a season and a half, that he said Live from New York. One was the President of the United States, and the other was Garrett when Richard Pryor hosted. Even when Chevy was out injured in season two, he was still delivering Live from New York via telephone. So it just goes to show what a presence that was. And your second point, spot on too. Weekend Update. Every week, you knew you were seeing Chevy. You know, even episodes like the Paul Simon episode, where the cast is not in that episode, episode two, Chevy's doing Weekend Update, and every week he's saying his name. And those two things on a brand new show full of people you don't know were huge, because there were some episodes, you know, you'd see John once, you'd barely see Lorraine, you'd barely see Garrett. So those early seasons, those early shows, I should say, just knowing he was being seen twice in an episode was huge.
Yeah, and that's something that Lauren's always talked about, that he got to say his name. But I think even more importantly than that is, if you look at that first season, they don't even show the pictures of the cast. They don't, you know, until towards the end of season one, when they start putting up the bumpers in the opening credits, and you get to see. So if you're seeing John in a sketch, there's no Google to go to. There's no magazine articles necessarily that are coming out at that point. You don't know who John is. You know, now we do.
Yeah.
But
I didn't think about that. It's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, we get Jane saying her name a couple of times over the course of the first season. But really, nobody else is saying their name and putting a name to the face. So I think that's really, really key to what happens here with Chevy. So, okay. So yeah, as you said, he's, you know, the Live from New York, that's another key point. And the fact that he only doesn't do it twice. Plus the pratfalls, right? So if you're a viewer in 1975, that's what you're tuning in for, right? You want to see this guy fall over in all the different ways and the inventive ways that they come up with. Are there any pratfalls that really stick out to you as far as Chevy's Live from New York's?
I love the Christmas one where he does four and he's putting decorating the tree. That's kind of iconic. I love that one.
Final Christmas tree ornament on the tree. No problem.
There's another cold open. It's not so much the fall itself, but it's the cold open gag where, again, they got very meta, which they did early on, which I think a lot of us love. And so near the end of season one, it's the Jill Clayburgh episode. It's one of my favorite cold opens. They actually reference this like kind of in the 15th anniversary where Chevy's on set and he's supposed to do the fall, I think climb up a ladder and screw a light bulb or whatever. And he's like, I don't want to do this. And he walks off set and goes up the stairs and walks through the audience to Lauren's office and talks to Lauren. And then he convinces him to go back and he walks back through. And it's just like, again, not the fall, but just that whole like meta idea in that cold opening is one of my favorite of the era.
Yeah, I love that. That's one of my favorites too. And getting to see, I always love when we get to see the top tier of 80, because that's not something we see. You know, we see a lot of backstage stuff, not as much these days, but especially in the early days, but you don't get to see so much of, and getting the audience reactions as he's stumbling through. And as you said, the 15th anniversary, that's really an important moment that kind of meshes it all together. So as far as where do you want to start with Chevy's highlights? What do you want to point out first?
I don't mean this in a bad way. There's not tons of specific highlights, and I don't mean that as a knock. I mean, one, he was just on there so briefly, and that first season was a lot of them figuring stuff out. So they didn't have a lot of the recurring characters and a lot of the impressions. But along those lines, I'd say let's start probably Gerald Ford. You know, he does the first real quote unquote recurring impression with Gerald Ford.
Right.
We can argue whether it's an impression or not all day, but the point more so being is with that, he really helped Saturday Night Live define their role as political satirists. And that's when they really started doing that in season one, and they got into a little bit better season two with him and Dan doing Debate 76. And I think that's a very important part. The fact that he gave the show a vehicle to comment on politics can't go understated.
Because this is the last of these historic debates, we will begin with our national anthem.
I can name that tune in four notes.
No, no.
The Star Spangled Banner.
No, Mr. President.
Nope. The Battle Hymn of the Republic. How about I Gotta Be Me?
And he ends up doing this 16 times, if you include his hosting gigs. So it's very interesting to see what they choose to do here. They never put him in makeup of any sort. There's no attempt at all to make him look like that. And as you said, this is the first instance we really see SNL affecting politics. And as somebody who enjoys the politics of SNL along with SNL, this is really a key moment, I think. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's always been a lot of talk of, did they affect the election because they made Ford into this bumbling fool who allegedly only fell once, but they made it into a meal for the next year and a half. Do you think that's the case? I mean, do you think that Ford lost because Chevy was doing his impression and his jokes at Weekend Update?
I don't know if Ford lost, and it's, you know, a little tough for me to say because I wasn't there at the time,
right.
But I will say it did no favors. It definitely did no favors to help him, you know, push him over the edge. So whether or not it cost him, I don't know, but it definitely did not help.
Right. And I mean, there's so many good moments. You mentioned the Christmas episode, which until about 10, 15 years ago was the opening to every Christmas package that SNL put out, where he falls off the tree. I love the one with Ron Nessen as well, mm-hmm. when he, you know.
Roll over, Liberty.
Roll over. Yes, exactly. Not knowing what holiday it is. But kind of parlaying that into Weekend Update. We'll get into more of Weekend Update. But the Ford jokes were always something that really stuck out to me. So he's opening the show a lot of the time, doing Ford. And then half an hour, 45 minutes later, he's telling these Ford jokes. One of my favorites was always the Secret Service jokes. Where, you know, Gerald Ford has a cold, Secret Service was very alert and wrestled the tissue to the ground.
Yeah.
But
there's a great sketch with Buck Henry where they have like the Secret Service are like acting bumbling in the background to make Ford seem normal. That's another good instance, another good idea.
Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, and as you said, getting into season two where he comes back, debate 76. I mean, this is a line I still quote to this day.
All the time.
Right. I mean, it was my understanding there would be no math, right? but this is really the beginning of how many great debate sketches they do over the next 50 years. I think this sets a standard that's barely touched any other point. Do you think that's the case?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the iconic sketches of all time. And, as we just said, they were messing around in season one trying to find the formula of how to address things, and politics being one of them. And they found their groove in season two on a lot of things. And they especially found their groove in season two with this debate sketch with him and Dan. And, another thing we should say, like, Dan does Jimmy Carter with a mustache. So it's hard for, like, not normal. It's hard for newer viewers to grasp this concept of the cast doing impressions of people and looking nothing like them, because now they go through all this prosthetics and wigs and everything, and it just wasn't how you did it back in the day. It wasn't the case.
Yeah, I mean, newer viewers who have been watching since like season 10, right? Because they start the Reagan prosthetics early on. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's so jarring to see. Like, Dan would not shave his mustache, and at least he grays his hair, right? So we have that going for him, but...
That's a fun progression to watch, too. The Carter Gray levels.
And he is trying to do an impression unlike Chevy. But I think that goes to the credit of Chevy, that he is able to do this without any of that and really give us the politics in 1975 and 76 that you weren't seeing anywhere else. So where would you like to go next?
Well, I mean, there's two things when people think about SNL. It's impressions and characters. And so the other thing I guess we go to is Landshark. Chevy's responsible for one of the first recurring characters. There were the bees, there's the samurai, but Landshark. And again, got to remember season one, they didn't want to do recurring characters. It was never a thought in their head. You know, a samurai was never supposed to be a recurring until Buck came back and wanted to do it. So... Landshark's fun. It's an easy character. It's an easy gag.
Yes?
Mrs. Arlsberg?
Who?
Mrs. Borovnia?
Who is it?
Flowers.
Flowers for whom?
Plumber, ma'am.
I don't need a plumber. You're that clever shark, aren't you?
Candy Graham.
It's done very well, not that many times, but to show how important it is, it's still iconic. Everybody thinks about it when they think about SNL in that early years. They think of Landshark.
Sure. I mean, and Jaws 2 is hilarious, right? I mean,
such a
knowing what we know now, how many did they make?
Right.
12. But it's one of those moments you don't ever see Chevy's face. It's just his voice. Everybody's kind of involved in this. It's one of the first instances where we get the whole cast involved, right? Because you get Lorraine, you've got Jane, Gilda, all answering the door to this Landshark who's trying to kill them. And then obviously Belushi and Aykroyd are fantastic in those roles as the investigators trying to figure out what's going on. But yeah, I mean, another instance of, iconic line that still to this day, if you said to somebody, Candy Graham, they would know what you were talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they do bring this back. Not a whole lot, as you said. I think it's four times while he's on the show. A few more times after that. It's one of the last time he appears on the show. He appears as Landshark on Weekend Update. But yeah, this is another moment that really is impressive what Chevy is able to do with very little.
And I think we shouldn't undersell this moment. Like, it sounds like a little thing. Oh, he created a recurring character. But to just emphasize how different that, like, it wasn't a plan. They didn't want to come out and make all these characters. Now, maybe not so much now, but, once you got into the 90s, 2000s, like, recurring characters was a thing. That's what they banked on. Back then, they didn't want that. So this was kind of a different thing. And to your point, what do we tune into? What are we going to see? We're going to see the fall. We're going to see update. Maybe we'll see Landshark. Like, it was one of the very few things I think viewers tuning into were hoping they could see. It was in the back of their head as something they might see, because every week was always new stuff.
Right. Well, and along the lines of not seeing Chevy. So, it, you know, this tells you what a great performer he is. You don't necessarily have to see his face on the screen. This is a deeper cut. I don't know if you remember this one, the Milkman.
Oh, the Milkman, yes.
So the Muppets are in L.A., and the much derided Muppets. I think it was the Joe Clayburgh episode, if I'm correct. But and so he goes on to the set and he's just using his hands, right? He's just, the Milkman is coming over to have an affair with the wife, and it's just the two hands, and eventually the Milkman comes in. He's holding a glass of milk, can't figure out how to put it down and still talk as the Milkman. But you only see Chevy at the very last second in this. You don't even know it's both of his hands until the very end. I think that just kind of speaks to his ability on the show too, right?
Yeah. Oh, totally. There's another great sketch. I thought when you were going to go with that, there's a sketch early on where it's like rolling joint, and it's all a voiceover, but it's Chevy's hands like fumbling and trying to roll a joint. And that's the whole sketch, is his hands. And it's just, again, like to your point, you don't see Chevy, but it's all him. And it's such a funny, funny bit.
Yes. What else should we touch on here? There's a couple of iconic sketches that we haven't gotten to yet, but where would you like to go next?
Well, I think the last kind of broader subject, and I think that's how you have to really talk about Chevy to sell and understand him, is the bigness. And the third one is obviously Weekend Update. It's something that's stayed on the show for 50 years. He really helped create this template with Herb Sargent, you know, writing it and performing it. But, you know, this was new. Again, I feel like I keep saying it over and over, but it's true. Like, this was new. It wasn't on TV before. Chevy doing fake news. And he would set the template that Jane would carry after he left, and Jane and Bill, and years. So you have to acknowledge that, you know, there's two things, right, that have really kept through 50 years. Live from New York at Saturday Night and Weekend Update.
Yeah.
And Chevy started both of them and set the template for both of them.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, Jane did it very well after he left.
Excellent.
Yes. But there was a lot of struggles getting from Chevy and Jane to Dennis Miller. So you've got like this 10-year Weekend Update almost doesn't survive in the Ebersol era. They do a lot of different things. There's a lot of bad Weekend Update hosts. So I think that kind of increases the thought of the legend of Chevy at the desk.
Mm-hmm.
And every time he comes back to host, he does some version of
Weekend Update. He's always there.
Including the very awkward one. Where he's basically sitting on Dennis Miller's lap in season 12.
Chevy? Sorry, am I late? Any mail for me?
None of it's favorable, but you know.
Tomorrow, December 7th, is the 45th anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor, which started the movie careers of John Wayne, Ward Bond, Van Johnson, William Bendix, Aldo Ray, and Ronald Reagan. We'd like to thank the Empire of Japan for creating these great stars. Especially Aldo Ray, who I understand wanted to be president at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How's that for witty banter between us, huh?
Why don't you take the next story, Dennis?
All right, Chevy. Okay. Thank you.
They couldn't expand the set. Like, it's so crazy. But yeah, I mean, to your point, like, this is really, really important. From opening to ending of Weekend Update every week, there was so much there. And it was basically just him. I mean, there were certain correspondents that came on. It's not like today where you're going to get 2-3 correspondents. It's a lot of joke telling. It's a lot of, one of my favorite parts of this is always the innuendo with, on the phone.
Oh, the telephone gag. Yeah.
Oh my God. Brilliant. The fact that they got those jokes in under the censors, who, you know, they kind of referenced this in the movie that just came out where, you know, if they worded it just the right way, the censor wouldn't understand it because they were an old person who had no idea. The one that kind of sticks out in my mind is that truck that passed us.
And now, Weekend Update with Chevy Chase.
What do you mean? No, you remember on the freeway, that truck that passed us? I swear they could see your head. Honey, it did not look like you were napping.
I've got it. Good evening, I'm Chevy Chase, and you're not. Our top story tonight, in a landmark ruling.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Yeah, he sets another that moment from right at the beginning. He hasn't even said his name yet.
Right.
He's on the phone. He says this sexual joke, and then he goes into everything else.
Another thing he was great at on Update, you don't see this ever anymore, but there used to be tons of technical issues where they didn't know which camera to look at or something wouldn't come up on the screen. And Chevy Chase was brilliant at playing off the gaffes, whether he had a joke fail or went to the wrong camera or somebody's audio didn't work. Chevy was fantastic at playing off those flubs and making them funny.
Yeah, yeah. And even when he flubbed, right? Toy boat, toy boat.
Oh, toy boat, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's so many good jokes here. Again, this is where we get the politics in the show, especially early on. All the Gerald Ford jokes, a lot of different, and some of it is sight gags, not as much as they would do in later years, where I think they went a little too far with that, where it was just look at the funny picture and try to make a joke out of it. But Chevy, when he was given that, was very, very good at that as well. Another part of Weekend Update I always liked was the artist rendering, where the squeaky from, where he starts doing another voice. And I think in one of those, he actually says he's Jacqueline Carlin, who, of course, is his girlfriend who he leaves the show for. But, you know, he just changes his voice. He holds his nose. And eventually these terrible drawings of courtrooms and things like that, eventually it cuts back to him and he's caught in the act and he's, you know, embarrassed about what he's just done.
So good.
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to say, I mean, I don't know if you remember the original VHS tape of Chevy. So this is going back. They did a Belushi, they did an Aykroyd. I'm talking mid-80s, pre-Broadway video. They did one for Chevy in 87. And it's, to your point, like there's so little here outside of the main hubs of what he did. There were 6 Weekend Update segments on this Best of Chevy Chase VHS tape.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
yeah,
the importance can't be overstated, what he had to do here with Weekend Update. And getting to say his name, right?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So other sketches, we have to talk about word association, right?
Sure. Yeah, yeah. It's top of my list. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So what are your thoughts as you went back and watched this? I mean, this is something, as you guys like to say,
this is a
1975.
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, it's a brilliant sketch. It's so well written. It's so well performed. I don't think anybody plays it as well with Richard Pryor as Chevy Chase does. He's the perfect foil to him. I love it. I think it's still one of the all-time best sketches they've ever done.
Dog.
Tree.
Fast.
Slow.
Rain.
Snow.
White.
Black.
Bean.
Pod.
Negro.
Whitey.
Tar baby.
What'd you say?
Yeah, and the fact that they couldn't do this today, right? I mean, that's without question they couldn't do this today. Right. As savage as the joke swap is on Weekend Update and things like that, and you know all the online pub that that gets, there is nothing that would come close to approaching this as far as, like, mm-hmm. could you imagine Twitter existing when this came out?
Right. No, no.
But yeah, it is brilliant. And you see these two comedic minds just playing off each other, watching Chevy's face as he gets more scared mm-hmm. as Pryor gets more and more agitated by these ridiculous words that he's saying. And yeah, he plays one great dead honky.
It's a classic. I love it.
Where would you like to go next?
Well, you know, it's tough because he's not in a lot of straight up sketches, and you know, diverge a little bit here too, just for a second. We got to remember he's only on the show not even a season and a half.
Yeah,
and you know, nowadays, you know, there's cast members on for 4, 5, 6 seasons. Like, they're on there, they build a library. I don't know if you can fathom how fast he rose the ranks, you know, to even by the end of his tenure, people had immediately said Chevy stopped writing for the show. He was only writing for Chevy. A lot of Chevy's pieces are solos to cameras. You know, he'll do some ads, or he does some impressions. He does a thing called Very White in season one.
And baby, I remember the first time I saw you. You were down on the beach entertaining the Vandekamps. And I was at the tennis club looking for a fourth for mixed doubles. And baby, I feel like I gotta sing to you now.
It's brilliant. It's super, super funny. He has a lot of small moments. There's a great sketch in a very bad episode, the Christopher Christofferson episode, where he and Christofferson do a sketch called Waiting for Pardo, and as a play on Waiting for Godot. Yeah. And it's really smart, and Chevy's really good. They're both really good in it.
Have you ever seen him?
No. Well, nobody
how
has.
Do you know he exists?
What?
How do you know he exists?
I've heard him.
We're on game shows.
Yes. Jeopardy.
We can't wait much longer.
We don't have much time.
Yes, you do, boys, because here's good news.
After we get through those big things with Chevy, it's all touches here and there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Well, and to your point, I mean, you mentioned this earlier when they have him on the phone in season two, when he hurts himself after debate 76. Do you think the show was just absolutely terrified that they were going to go under with Chevy leaving? I mean, you know, Belushi and Gilda and Aykroyd felt in their hearts that they could carry the show. But do you think overall, as an entity, was SNL thinking that this might be over?
I don't know if they think it was over, but you definitely had to be worried, to the point of which Chevy leaves the show and they pre-recorded a bunch of bits with him.
Yeah.
So they could sprinkle them throughout the show after he left. So he wasn't like fully gone. You know, there's a couple commercial parodies they do. He shows up a few weeks later in the Paul Simon pre-tape outside us, outside the building. There's an episode late in season two where when they do cuts to the audience to commercial, and Chevy's in there.
That's true.
So they kept him around enough where and again, it's not where today where social media and everybody's talking about it all the time. Throughout most of season two, you never knew Chevy could show up somewhere, you know, all the way up until the season finale where he does a Landshark cameo with Buck Henry in the Charles Lindbergh sketch. Right. So this, the importance of him, they definitely weren't thinking, let's just cut the cord and run away. You know, they definitely wanted to keep Chevy around any way they could.
Yes. And I mean, we saw this almost a decade later with Eddie too, with a lot of pre-tapes.
Right.
But yeah, that cold open is iconic. And it's really the beginning of the jokes that they make at Chevy's. Well, I guess they did it in Jeopardy 1999, where they said the person who...
Great sketch.
Right. But there's all these jokes about how he's going to be a failure. So there's very passive-aggressive joking going on all through season mm-hmm. two, as you said, with him sitting in the audience later on in the season. So, yeah, it's a very curious thing to me. As you said, like, there's nobody who would be on the show for a season and a couple episodes today, and you'd be like, all-timer, right?
Right, and even have the discussion. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And it's funny because he left. I mean, it wasn't like he left on great terms. You know, it's weird. Like, the show needed him, but at the same time, like, Lorne was pissed and felt betrayed that he left him. And they wanted him to stay. And, you know, Chevy has even now, you know, hindsight, gone back and said, leaving the show was a mistake. I shouldn't have left that early. So it's a very interesting time when he leaves, because he was just so important to that show.
So I think this is the best of both worlds in hindsight, right? Because Chevy does eventually, we'll get into some of his post-SNL stuff at the end here, but, you know, he does go on and become a huge movie star. And the rest of the cast starts to become stars in their own right. Everybody gets a chance to say live from New York. Everybody gets their moment to shine, pretty much. And so, I mean, this is a win-win in hindsight 50 years later, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. I don't think the show would have evolved to what it became with Chevy on the show. You know, they were forced to kind of step away from the Chevy Chase show, because it kind of was the Chevy Chase show season one. You know, there were episodes he would overtake episodes. You know, he'd be in, you know, any of the quote unquote kind of good sketches he'd be in, you know, or he'd find his way to, you know, weasel his way in with the host. It was Chevy did a lot of, I said, singles or two person sketches where it was Chevy and the host. He was very good at, let me do a scene with the host and I'll have the spotlight with the host. And I think, with the show being so new, the hosts wanted that because they knew Chevy. Okay, we know Chevy. He's this entity. We know what it is. But him leaving forces the show to get better.
Yeah.
And they get Bill Murray. Dan Aykroyd shines. Jane does an amazing job on Weekend Update, in my opinion. And so you get to see the ensemble where if Chevy stayed on, I feel like you probably more likely than not would have been seeing more and more Chevy. Like Chevy as the star and everyone supporting him, at least for another season or two.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to think, you know, we do a million what ifs when we talk about SNL, but do some of these people, these icons that haven't really gotten a chance yet, do they leave the show? I mean, could you see? I could see a scenario where Belushi leaves after season two because he's not getting anything. I mean, as you said, Chevy is in everything. Chevy's the spokesperson in a lot of stuff. You know, we now know Dan as that kind of person. He does Shimmer, right? I mean, that's another.
I was going to say, moment. That's a great one. New Shimmer is a great sketch, and it's Chevy as the spokesman, not Dan. Yeah.
Dan's the dad or the husband in this scenario, and that's jarring in hindsight to think about. But he does a great job. But again, to your point, like, this is one of those moments where you go, okay, would Dan have ever gotten the chance to be one of the stars of this show? You would like to think so, but there wasn't a lot of other places to go back then either. It's not like he could have become a star somewhere else. So yeah, I mean, I think this works out in hindsight for everybody.
And I know we're not talking writers, but we should also acknowledge Chevy was a writer on the show and a very influential and important writer at the start of that show. So I know it's not cast member specific, but you know, again, those early seasons too, those lines got blurred. Writers were performing. I mean, Chevy was hired as a writer. He was originally hired on the show as a writer and kind of not weaseled, but weaseled his way into getting into the cast. You know, they did a lot of these pre-tapes in the summer and you'd see a bunch of cast members in them. You know, O'Donohue kind of got in this way. I'm thinking of Jam It All, New Dad, where Chevy got a chance to show his performing chops and then got himself into the cast that way. But he was originally hired as a writer and a very good writer. And he wrote some really good pieces and was very involved in the shape of what the comedy of that show was. You know, a lot of, at the time, a lot of people say there were kind of three, it was like a three-headed brain trust. of what was going on the show, what was getting on the show. And it was Lorne, Michael O'Donohue, who was the head writer, and Chevy. And yeah. those were the three guys who really dictated what this show was going to be and what the vibe of the show is going to be. And yes, it's not cast member specific, but you can't, Chevy's contributions to that first season are just so many.
No, I think that's very relevant because, I mean, even today, if you see somebody like Mikey Day, if they wrote the sketch that they're in, I think you give them some extra credit. Absolutely. And mm-hmm. famously, as you said, in that summer leading up to season one, they're doing a lot of those pre-tapes, which took a lot longer back then, obviously. So the fact that they got as many in as they did, and then they get that Christmas break, and the three of them just work, as you said, O'Donohue, Lorne, and Chevy, pretty much locked in a bunker, writing all this stuff, and they come out so strong at the beginning of 76 because of that.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many other writers that we get to know over the course of time. But yeah, as you said, it's this three-headed monster of in that season one of them just locking themselves in a room and writing for 12 or 15 hours.
Yeah.
Anything else before we get to the end of Chevy?
Well, I'd say there. Well, yeah, I get two more sketch options. One is there's the Christmas episode. He has two kind of under the radar sketches that are great. One is Leighton Elf, and the other is a little thing called Parents' Nightmare, where he calls his he plays a college kid calling his parents from home, and then he's murdered somebody.
Your mother and I are going to help you out. We'll get a lawyer down there. We'll spend any amount of money to get a lawyer to prove your innocence, Billy.
Well, I'm guilty, Dad.
Your mom and I love you very much, son, and we'll do anything we can to help you, and I'm sure that whatever you did there, you did for a good reason, and you're a good boy, Billy.
No, I'm not. I helped to kill 26 boys.
26 boys? Aha.
Well, I picked up these hitchhikers and brought them over to parties at Mr. Eli's, and...
Just great kind of... Subtle Chevy plays it very well. People probably don't know. And my favorite probably performance of Chevy's, aside from Ford in Debate 76 or Ford in general, is again one of the best sketches of the era written by O'Donohue, Last Voyage of the Star Trek Enterprise, where he plays Leonard Nimoy to John's Captain Kirk. I just his performance is just great. It's understated. It's not a Chevy sketch. He's definitely a supporting player, but he just nails it. And I love watching him in that.
There must be some way out!
You're becoming quite emotional, Captain. Needless to say, my trained Vulcan mind finds such open displays of emotion distasteful. Emotion, you see, interferes with logic. It is only by dealing with the problems in a logical, scientific fashion that we can arrive at valid solutions. Now, with regard to the alien takeover of the Enterprise, I would suggest that we seek some new alternative, based on some exact computer analysis, of course, and take into consideration elements of...
I don't believe this! God! Everybody wants the show. They want to see the show. I have a contract. Where's my ears?
So, yeah, let's start with Leighton Elf here. I mean, this is surprisingly progressive for 1975, right? Because it's all this undercurrent of, coming out of the closet as a homosexual, but it's as an elf. And mm-hmm. I mean, Candace is just fantastic in this as well. And then we get Dan and Jane a little bit later, finding out that they're the parents of, and Dan's always been a Leighton Elf himself. I love this one. And I feel like this just does not get enough play.
It doesn't.
In modern doesn't. Christmas holiday times.
Yes, I'm an elf. I'm an elf and I'm proud of it. Now maybe you'll understand what I was doing with all those 8x10s of Santa's helpers over my bed.
How did it start, Teddy? How did it happen? You were always a red-blooded American boy going off to football practice.
Only I wouldn't go off to football practice. I'd go off to some leafy glade and make merry.
Fantastic moment for him, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so let's get Star Trek. He's playing straight guy here. Like, he's not... front and center. This is one of the first times, right, that we really get to see Belushi shine and mm-hmm. Chevy but he plays it so well. Everybody really does their role really well here. And it's one of those moments. I mean, how long is the sketch? It's like 12 or
Yeah, it's a long sketch, there's just so many layers to it. It's so good.
Yeah, it's so, so good. But yeah, it's almost like the passing of the baton, because it's really towards the tail end. I think it's episode 22 of season one. So we're really towards the end of Chevy's reign.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like the passing of the baton to Belushi. And he just plays it so well. Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree. Two other moments that I'd like to touch on, and I know this is, you know, from talking to you over at the Not Ready for Primetime project, I know you love this one too, the National Uvula Association. I mean, this was something.
I don't know, Babs.
Knock, knock. it's so ridiculous and so ludicrous, but it's one of those things that if they had not put it in so many different packages, it was on the 15th anniversary. It was in the Best of Chevy Chase for a long time. So he's the doctor who comes into the house to help Gilda with her uvula.
That must be him.
I won't beat around the bush, Babs.
Is it bad?
In a nutshell, your uvula is on the fritz. Which reminds me of a little joke. Knock, knock.
There?
Babs's uvula.
Babs's uvula who?
I don't know, Babs, but I do know this. Really let your uvula go to the dogs.
Has no idea what's going on with the uvula, but yeah, it's the whole thing. Reminds me of a little joke. Knock, knock. Who's there? Babs' uvula. I don't know, Babs, but I do know this. You're really let your uvula go to the dogs.
Yeah, it's great. And Chevy's great at it. It's so good.
Yeah, I mean... he's hamming it up to the camera, but it's still just really, really good. And the other one I want to touch on really quick is Claudine Lage.
Oh yeah, that's another good. I thought just because you had me in commercial mode, I thought you were going to bring up Autumn Fizz, which is another hilarious commercial parody of him and Gilda. But,
yeah, go ahead and talk about
Claudine
that.
Lage is no. It's like Chevy and Gilda as a commercial for a female feminine hygiene product, Autumn Fizz, and just Chevy. There's so many. Sorry, it's going to get me going on a tangent. There's just, because now I'm thinking of like the Chris Christopherson cold open when he's in bed with his wife, and it's just, there's just so many like little Chevy moments that just really sell season one. But no, Claudine Lage is another amazing sketch.
Yeah, I mean, this is really one of the few times in the history of SNL where they issued an on-air apology. If you don't know, and why would you? Because this was almost 50 years ago, and it was. But Claudine Lage was semi-famous. She was married to Andy Williams, I believe, and mm-hmm. she was accused of accidentally shooting her husband, whose name escapes me. But yeah, I mean, it becomes this ski invitational, and they're just showing all the stock footage of skiers coming down this huge incline and collapsing or falling in various forms. And it's just Chevy and Jane talking about, he's accidentally been shot by Claudine Lage.
Every time he falls, I think there's like a gunshot. I think they put in a gunshot.
They put a gunshot in.
Yes. Yeah, but every time he goes, oh, he's accidentally been shot again. Nope, he's all right. Oh, nope, he's been shot again. Accidentally shot.
Yeah, and I mean, it devolves from there. Like they have to wrap it up really quickly, so they show all these different shots of all these skiers falling over. And they did come on the next week, and Pardo had to apologize because Andy Williams protested about slandering Claudine Lage. But it really stands the test of time as just one of those really dark moments, dark humor moments in the history of SNL, and Chevy's a big part of that, right?
Oh yeah. No, totally. Totally. I don't think we can say enough how vital and important Chevy was to the comedic tone of that show. And he wins an Emmy, by the way.
He wins an Emmy. Right. Exactly.
He wins an Emmy in season one. Yeah. We've said this on other shows. I think there are four people that are primarily responsible for SNL, not only not succeeding, but just literally getting past season one and surviving to a season two. And they all win Emmys season one. You know, it's Lorne Michaels, Michael O'Donohue, the lead writer, Davey Wilson, the director, and Chevy. Yes. Like, those four are the people most responsible for SNL even surviving and existing into season two.
100%. Couldn't agree more. So we get one really great moment with the last episode, official episode of Chevy being cast member. So it's our friend Buck Henry. And this is the episode where Buck accidentally gets hit by the samurai sword. and has to put a bandage on. And Chevy takes it upon himself to put a Band-Aid on himself as well. So, and as this episode progresses, we get a rare runner in SNL where everybody's wearing bandages of varying sizes. By the time they get to the good nights, everybody's got these huge bandages on the top of their head. And you can kind of credit Chevy for that. I mean, he even makes a joke on Weekend Update about Buck getting hit by the swords.
Yeah.
It's a great way to go out as a cast member.
Yeah, it really is.
So we've covered all of his time as a cast member. You know, we'll touch briefly on, obviously, he becomes this huge movie star in the 80s with iconic movies that everybody's seen, right? Any of those really stick out as a favorite for you?
Oh, Chevy movie? I mean, Caddyshack, of course, is great. Fletch is amazing. National Lampoon's Vacation, great. Christmas Vacation. I mean, yeah, he goes on to be one of the biggest, if not the biggest, comedy stars of the 80s. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I don't think outside of Eddie Murphy, I don't know that there's anybody else that you could point to in the 80s that really stands right out in this way. So he does come back and host 8 times. Almost every one of them has some kind of story about the behind the scenes stuff. So we won't dig deep into that, but
yeah, I agree. It's not why we're here, but it all goes back to him being a cast member. You know what I mean? Like it's all, he's coming back from what he means to the show and what Chevy means to the show as a cast member. You know, season 6, when Dominion gets fired and Dick Ebersol has one episode, who does he call to come in? Chevy. Yeah. Chevy comes in. This is before all the movies we talked about. Oh, not Caddyshack. Yeah, but, you know,
right,
he calls Chevy to come in. Chevy does come back to host 2 times after he left the show during the original era. He hosts in season 3 and season 5, all based on how, I don't think we can, the episode in season 3 when Chevy Chase comes back to host is just a monumental episode in the lore of SNL. And it was the highest rated episode of that season. Like, people couldn't wait to see Chevy come back to the show. And even Lorne, when Lorne returns in season 11, right? Madonna host episode 1, of course, you go out, you start things with a big bang. Who does Lorne bring in for his second episode back? Chevy Chase.
Yeah. And I mean, I've made this point on other podcasts. I don't think you can overstate the fact that would we ever see alumni, say the show still lasts 50 years. The fact that an alumni who left on precarious terms, has this issue with Bill Murray, comes back to host. I mean, this is an important moment in SNL history. Now we see it. If we don't get an alumni hosting at least 2, 3, 4 times a season, we're like, well, what the hell is going on? How quick is somebody come back? I mean, Kate McKinnon comes back quickly and things like that. I think it's really important to the history of SNL that alumni are shown that they can come back to where they started. I think that's huge.
I agree. And to the point of coming back, you know, people argue, do you get banned or not banned from the show? It's just simply you don't come back. You don't get asked to come back. But regardless, you know, and Chevy's returns were met with issues, yes. But even if Chevy was the nicest guy in the world, he wasn't making anything in the last 20 some odd years to come back on the show. Steve Martin is rare. Like, he's a unicorn of he's doing stuff like 50 years after his break on S, you know, that he's still worth putting on the show. Just Chevy hasn't done that. But, and you mentioned it earlier, we see him in cameos continuously. And those aren't cameos because he was a big movie star. They're cameos because Chevy is vital to what SNL is and the memory of SNL. And that's why he's brought back in cameos on Update or the Chris Farley Cold Open or 5 Timers Clubs. Like, Chevy is brought back repeatedly. And let's be honest, he's back hosting the show in the 90s because it's Chevy from SNL. Like, again, his movies, by the time he was those last couple hosting stints, he wasn't Fletch Chevy Chase or Caddyshack Chevy Chase. He's, you know, the memoirs of the invisible man, Chevy Chase, or some stupid Cops and Robbersons Chevy Chase, which, hey, whatever. But my point being, the reason Chevy kept coming back is because of what he meant to the show as a cast member.
Yes, 100%. And those cameos are really, really good. Quotable Caddyshack is another one of those too. One of the last times we see Bill Murray on the show.
Oh, that's right.
And it's kind of a full circle moment, right? Where we get these two guys who had a big issue in the 70s. Obviously, they've made a couple movies together. And to have him come on Bill's hosting gig to talk about the quotable Caddyshack. But yeah, so the last time we see him outside of the 40th anniversary is the five-timer sketch in season 38 with Justin Timberlake. Mm-hmm. And so now it's been 12 years. Now, do you think there's any chance outside of an anniversary special that we'll ever see Chevy on SNL proper?
No, I don't think so. But I don't think it's a bad thing. You know, it's funny. Dan Aykroyd was interviewed recently and he's like, I'm old. Like, I don't feel like being up till midnight. Like, I can't do that anymore. You know, I just, and unfortunately, Chevy is, he's just out of the, you know, he's out of the pop culture zeitgeist. Or if he isn't, it's for negative things. You know, I feel like, and they, you know, SNL will bring people back that have had, you know, issues in the press or in public opinion. But I don't think, aside from an anniversary, you'll see him, or it's really warranted. I mean, I think I am not the biggest fan of abundance of cameos. Like, modern take on what they do with cameos is kind of annoying to me. So it's what makes anniversary special. Like, that's where you're going to see Chevy. Like, that's where you'll see those kind of people. So I like the fact that we're not going to see him until an anniversary. And I really do hope we see him on the 50th.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we wrap up here, Brad, anything you want to plug as far as the Not Ready for Primetime project? Tell us what's going on over there. You've got a lot of exciting things going on, I know.
Yeah, project's been going great. We just had we had you on a couple weeks ago for our Buck Henry episode. You helped us out with Buck Henry, the Grateful Dead. We've got, you know, we're trying to do a lot of things up to the 50th. We're going to do some new episodes. We have deep thoughts. We're going to revisit some of the old anniversary shows and put them on with some different guests. We've got some fun tournament talk we've been doing, a new show we've been doing. So we've been trying to like branch out a little bit and get to a bigger audience. So hopefully people who like your show will listen in and chime in. And we've just been having a lot of fun. It's been a great time. We're a third of the way through season 4 right now, and it's been great.
Yeah, you guys do such a great job. I was so thrilled to come over and talk about Buck Henry a couple weeks ago with you guys. And just going back and watching those episodes reminds us why. I mean, that's why we're here right now, talking about the beginnings of SNL and how important it is. So last chance.
This drops the 27th, right?
20th.
Oh, this is right. Yeah. Okay. So I was going to say next week, listen, Bill Kenny may be back on the project next week.
Spoiler alert. Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Tune in.
So final case for Chevy Chase, Brad, what do you want to say to the listeners and the people who are voting for the SNL Hall of Fame?
I'm going to say, open up your minds and don't try to sit there and pick out characters and impressions and make a count of a numbers, because you're not going to do it. He was only on the show for less than a season and a half. It's intangibles. It's what he meant to the show. You know, he was the breakout star of season 1. His rise was faster than anybody in the history of the show. We can't say enough his importance. Like, if Chevy Chase was not on SNL, there may not be an SNL after season 1. He was instrumental in huge things, political and impressions. You know, he did the Gerald Ford impression. He helped set the tone for political satire and what they could do with politics on the show. Along those lines, Weekend Update. He set the standard of Weekend Update. He created the template of what a Weekend Update anchor does. And last, you know, this one might be a stretch, but characters, you know, Landshark, he had one of the first recurring characters in the history of the show. It's one of the most iconic ones. So, you know, those three things, Update, politics, Landshark. I think you combine those with just the overall importance of what he meant to the show and how vital he was. And I ignore all the stuff after the fact, and it's a slam dunk.
So there's that. What a fabulous conversation between our new chief conversationalist, Bill Kenny, and Mr. Brad Robinson. That was a dynamite, hour. Didn't feel like an hour at all. But I got to say, you may have swayed me a little bit. You know, the classic line, you can't tell the story of SNL without blank. This is one of those instances, I think. How do you tell the story of SNL without everything you just heard? I don't know. I really, truly don't know. Waterboard me if you must. I won't say. At any rate, let's listen to one of his sketches. Brad mentioned Landshark, and that's one of the sketches. Well, that's the sketch we're going to listen to today on the podcast. So let's get right to that. This is Landshark.
Who is it?
Mrs. Robin.
Who is it?
Plumber.
Plumber? I didn't ask for a plumber. Who is it?
Telegram.
Oh, telegram, just a moment.
Oh my God! And you can't tell me this woman was killed by falling out of a tree! What is it? Land shark. Cleverest species of them all. Oh my God.
Arlsberg.
Who?
Mrs. Barlinger.
Who is it?
Flowers.
Flowers for whom?
Plumber, ma'am.
I don't need a plumber. You're that clever shark, aren't you?
Candy Graham.
Grab my foot. You get out of here before I call the police. You're the shark and you know it.
Wait, I'm only a dolphin, ma'am.
A dolphin? Well, okay.
Oh my God!
What is it?
Egg salad again.
Who is it?
Land shark.
Oh, Walter. Land shark.
Hello, Walter. I have some good news and I have some bad news. First, the good news. Betty and I are having a party tonight, and come on over. You'll have a great time. Now the bad news. You'll be coming stag.
Consider the cleverest of all sharks. Unlike the great white, which tends to inhabit the waters of harbors and recreational beach areas, the land shark may strike at any time, any place. It is capable of disguising its voice and generally attacks young single women. Expert at the University of Miami's Oceanographic Institute suggests that the best way to scare off the shark in the event of an attack is to hit or punch the predator in the nose. Now for the weather in the outlook.
Who is it?
Sorry to disturb you, ma'am. I'm from Jehovah's Witnesses. I thought you might be interested in a copy of our journal, The Watchtower.
Why, certainly. I'd be very interested.
Would you mind opening the door, please, ma'am?
Sure. Just a second.
You listen to the crowd there and they are eating everything that Chevy does up. He's got them in the palm of his hand. He really truly broke through the fourth wall into people's living rooms every Saturday night, and they felt like they were part of the party. Now, I'm curious whether that initial fan base of SNL felt abandoned when he left, or, you know, what the cast felt like. I know he wasn't very well liked, but it's just curious to me, I suppose. So there's that. that's what I've got for you today, other than to remind you that we have a new email address. It's thesnlhalloffame@gmail.com. We love to hear from you. It's always great. While you're doing that, you can also visit us on our socials at SNLHOF. You can please leave a 5-star review or 4, or, you know, maybe 3. Definitely 2 or 1. Just don't tell me about it. But, you know, leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. And if you've got a sharp pencil and you want to write a couple sentences, well, that would be cool too, because this is season 7 and baby, we're going out on top. So if you do me a favor and on your way out, as you walk past the Weekend Update exhibit, turn out the lights, because the SNL Hall of Fame is now closed.
Thanks for listening to the SNL Hall of Fame podcast. Make sure to rate, review, share, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on social media at SNLHOF. This is Doug Denant saying, see you next week.
Podcasts and such.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on Too Tired to Cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on Too Tired to Cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.